That's the Gentleman of Jazz, the great Benny Carter on alto sax with one of my favorites by him, Things Ain't What They Used to Be. This is from his wonderful 1985 album, Benny Carter, A Gentleman and His Music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, you know, I got to tell you, I could understand why people are so hyped up and they're so anxious these days, and I should say for the past several months, because you just don't know what else is going to happen with this administration. Well, President Trump is in, where is he now? He's in Brussels. And he is trying to, oddly enough, nearby, very nearby, was your old president, Barack Obama. And it concerns a meeting that he had, well, a gathering. It was a gathering sponsored by a church group. And he was nailed down. This is Barack Obama now, was nailed down for an appearance there since a year ago, it said. And, of course, we have this coinciding with Donald Trump arriving in Brussels for the final leg of his first foreign trip as President of the United States. So they're talking, and the middle person here is Angela Merkel, the President of Germany. And it's interesting, you know, how people can't talk in the United States, but fate arranges it that they're in the same space, really, that and with Merkel as the middle person that they both are talking to. I should mention that Trump got a rousing welcome, a rousing, a very spirited welcome in Brussels from tens of thousands of people who would rather see him go. So it's not that he received universal love on this tour. This was not necessarily a 100% love tour. The people made their sentiments known in the thousands in Brussels, greeting him with protests and sloganeering and banners and all kinds of things that indicated they would rather not have him there. They would rather see him go. An interesting poll came out. It was the results were printed today. And it is titled, The Four New Reasons Why More Than Half of Americans Disapprove of President Trump. Now, when they say something like that in the headline, four new reasons why more than half of Americans disapprove of President Trump, it means that there are several other reasons other than the four new ones. So it's a Quinnipiac University poll. And it says also, top of the four reasons they gave, they said that 55% of voters disapproved of Trump's performance in office compared with an approval rating of 37%. So 37% say they like what he's doing, but 55% disapprove. And all of this is, of course, feeding off of the chaos. Remember, I call him President Chaos, and it couldn't be a more appropriate moniker. Every day, it's a new torrent of chaos caused principally by him. And people are getting so anxious now because not only is there ever-present chaos, but it's the kind of chaos. They have nothing to do with it. They have no way of containing it or doing anything about it. They just have to be prepared to suffer through it because they know it will be there. So here's what the Quinnipiac University poll says about the four new reasons that people don't particularly like Trump and disapprove of his performance. One, voters consider Trump dishonest. Almost 6 in 10 U.S. voters polled by Quinnipiac, 59% said Trump was dishonest, while just 36% said he was honest. By 54% to 43%, they said Trump was abusing the privileges of his office. How about that? And this is, I mean, the man is just, the seat is not quite yet warm because he's only been there such a short time. And look at the kind of reactions he is generating. Number two, the investigation into possible collusion with Russia is taking its toll. A majority of voters, 55%, said Trump fired Comey to disrupt the FBI's ongoing probe into whether the campaign colluded with Russian officials. U.S. intelligence agencies have concluded that Russia intervened in the U.S. election to help Trump. Just 36% said Trump acted because he had lost confidence in Comey. This, again, is according to the Monmouth University poll and the Quinnipiac poll. It's you hear me sighing because I'm fed up of this already. The third point, Trump's big legislative win was anything but, says the poll. The president and House Republican leaders celebrated in the White House Rose Garden after voting to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act with legislation that the Congressional Budget Office said Wednesday would cover 23 million fewer Americans. The American Health Care Act also would cut Medicaid by almost $840 billion after Trump, during the campaign, promised not to do so and used the savings instead to cut taxes for corporations and wealthy Americans. But according to the poll, twice as many Americans, 46%, would see a cut in their benefits. We heard from Senator Al Franken yesterday, the senator from Minnesota, talk about the devastating impact of the cuts, and he did so in a way that I didn't hear any other legislator just lay it out. And he called it a scam. He called it a deliberate effort to mislead the people about their health care version of this bill. And he was furious. He says this is tantamount to lying, deceiving, and doing everything possible to avoid telling the truth, because the truth is that it isn't about health care. It is about taking money from one pool of people and directing it to another pool of people. It's class warfare, open class warfare, and the Trump administration is basically waging it. And four, majorities of voters still disagree with Trump on major issues. The Quinnipiac poll, which was conducted on May the 17th to the 23rd, had a margin of error of 3 percentage points. It says that people disagree still and intensely so with Trump on major issues. So those are the four new reasons that the pollsters are saying that people disapprove of President Trump. Well, we kind of were ahead of this poll, weren't we? We kind of, in fact, discussed these very points in a more conversational way than a scientific poll way. But we came to the same conclusions, principally. And here we are. The moment that we're in, this is the moment that we're in the United States. It's a very sad moment, and it's a very scary moment. But it is a moment that raises a number of very important questions that should be asked and answered now. The national crisis America currently is experiencing is scary. It's being regarded just the same as something, well, it's an unpleasant moment in our history. But really, we'll get over it. We'll get through it. All things will return to normal. And that's the point. We shouldn't want all things to return to normal because normal is not that good. So the thinking that they are trying to inculcate and trying to have us in turn believe is that we should lean heavily on our history of getting things done, handling tough situations. And even though the moment may be a little dark or it may be a bit panic-inducing, we should know that what makes us Americans, what makes America America, is that we can get through this intense moment. But what is this intense moment? Is it really just about being very annoyed about the way the 2016 election turned out? Is that it? Is it really about the difference between Hillary Clinton and what she might have been as a president and Donald Trump, about what he's turning out to be? It's like choosing your manner of death. You're going to die either way. But we should tune into the moment that we're in, historical moment that we're in a different way. Because this time, it is really very different. We shouldn't be fooled into thinking this is just a mild skirmish and, you know, we'll just keep going on. That's a super simplistic way to look at it. It might, in fact, be a good way to look at it, but it ignores what is really at the root of things. And to get to that point, we have to summon up some bravery. Because we have to look at the issues squarely in the eyes. Solutions will require radical surgery. And very few will agree that it ought to be done or that it even can be done. So let's ask the question. At least let's broach the question. Are our political and governmental systems, which I contend are at the heart of our current crisis, not just the people, it's the systems that are causing or that have caused the crisis we are experiencing now and that we will continue to experience in the future? Are these political and governmental systems beyond repair? Because if we have to fix things, it means that you fix things radically from the root. if it is to have lasting impact, if it is to endure. You go to the root of the problem. The root of the problem really isn't Donald Trump the person. It isn't Hillary Clinton. Really. Because you get people like that every day of the year. I see the problem as being rooted in the institutional failures of our political and governmental systems. It has come up time and time and time again. We see that they cannot be separated from other political problems. The systems cannot be separated from the problems. The systems, in many cases, originate the problems. They start the problems. They are the causes of the problems. Well, people would say, look how long we got along with the systems that we have. They work. Maybe not perfectly. We can't expect everything to be working perfectly. But they work well enough and have worked well enough to give us the faith that they will continue, they will endure. And locked into these systems and the way they're organized is the assurance that they will endure. There are methods of doing things. There are set rules. It's the people who mess up, not the system. And so we are at a point, I think, where we can and should look at this question. Is it the people who are messing up? Are things going wrong because Trump can't control his mouth? He has bad manners and a very short attention span and thinks the country is just, you know, his own private business where he can do what he wants when he wants to do it? Or are we seeing this the wrong way? We are forgetting that they are all, the people who control what happens in our society day to day, they are also in a system that shapes the way they think and do things. But we are not paying attention to the systems that shape the way they do things and the way they think. We think that's a whole different thing. That's a whole separate fight. What do you think? Is it a separate fight? Have we been here enough times, here in this moment? Have we been in this space enough times to persuade us to think differently? It is not so much the people, although we certainly cannot relieve them of the responsibility of the madness that they cause. But they are operating, at least to their understanding, and should be to our understanding, they're operating within a system. And they're just proceeding according to the mandates of that system, within the limits of that system. Because the system, having existed for so many years, has given them reason to believe it is better to side with the system, to go along with the system, than to break from it. I think it's time for an audit on this question. Has the system kind of served its purpose for the ruling elites and whoever else wants to side with it? Or is it time that we begin to think about restructuring things? The same system that regulated and limited political power for the average people in the United States of America continues to exist and thrive. We just had a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court invalidating two congressional districts that put into play in order to gerrymander districts used racial, guidelines, for lack of a better term, because this is what they use when they want to create new districts on the basis of race, gerrymandering. Now, you would think, well, the system said a long time ago, that's not supposed to happen anymore. It continues to happen. It continues to happen. So, are we evaluating the system? Is it time for many things to be thrown out? Is it time for a massive overhaul? Is it time for something new? Because the system governs our day-to-day lives. Should we form a new way of doing things? Because the system either is insufficient or undemocratic to fulfill the modest needs and expectations of the people. Is it time to throw it out or to overhaul significant portions of it? I mean, overhaul it. You can't tell me that witnessing what came out of this past election, and we now still dealing with it in another forum. We're dealing with it now in the courts. Is this a system that should be kept? The electoral process? Or does it need massive overhauling? If it is to serve the intended purpose, and we know it was intended only for certain people, to enjoy the rights of citizenship, which include voting. And even that, at the very beginning, was so skewed, was so racist, was so wrong. And we've lived with these systems that have become arcane, archaic, useless, limited. But maybe that's the idea, to have it function exactly that way, to keep the vision, the original vision of America by law, to keep the power in the hands of specific kinds of people and to lock out everybody else. So I look at it this way. It's not just Trump. Trump is a creation of the system. Hillary Clinton is a creature of the system. They're not only from the swamp, they're now in the sinkhole. They've placed us all in a sinkhole. And somebody's got to be responsible enough to raise the question, to what degree is the system itself self-destructing and causing destruction? Because it did not anticipate life and how it will be lived all these hundreds of years down the road. It could not foresee a society emerging in the way it has. And so they set up a system that they could tinker with from time to time that still would achieve and maintain its intended purpose. And they did not account for what time would do, the changes time would cause in our society that would make this perfectly crafted system now useless or troublesome, to say the least. The world we're living in was not imagined. And yet we are living with a system designed in an era where it was clear what the intention was. And there was no idea, no expectation that people would want to rebel against it because it is insufficient, or it is unfair, or it's undemocratic. So I'll take a little break here, since I have opined, and we'll come back and have you do some opining on the subject right after this. You're listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm trying to tackle the question. This is just the start of it. It will get deeper as we go. Looking at the correlation between the mess that we have, the messy people that we have in leadership, and a system that has bred both. Do we still want to look at it as merely a situation in which individuals are responsible, the individual action, and we sever that from a system that has given them permission to act the way they're acting, and thus create for all of us a really messy situation, which will continue for quite some time? We have been here before with messy situations. And we still, back then, and whenever these things happen, we tend to look at the individuals, but not the system. As regards the system, they are doing the right thing, because that's what the system was designed to do, to make sure that whatever they did was in the interest of maintaining a system. But it's the system, too, that must be looked at, and we must find a different way, because it's not at all perfect. In fact, it is quite destructive. And certainly in a changed and changing society, we should have governmental and political systems that are keeping pace, or that in fact set the pace for a just and democratic society, not just for now, but into the future. 888-874-4888 is the number to call when we get started. It's a philosophical question today. I'm trying to kind of jiggle your brains a little bit. And just, there's no right or wrong. It's just thinking about it. Just think about it. Should we scrap major portions of our political system because they're no longer relevant? Certainly not to a unified. At least in that sense, a unified society that aims, in fact, to live as closely to its professed purpose as possible. Because we know the system is designed to maintain inequality, to maintain a lack of democracy, to maintain rich versus poor, to maintain racial inequality and inequities. That's what the system was designed to do. And it functioned very, very well, very efficiently for decades, for hundreds of years, as a matter of fact. But in an evolved situation and evolving situation, do we not see that the system no longer can fulfill these aspirations, the aspirations of the people and the aspirations even of a system of governing people? What are your thoughts? Please do share. It is important to think about these things because we are trained, and we're not the only ones, people all over the world, we are trained to think in segmented or compartmentalized ways. We are not trained to link things together or to even dare to think about linking things together to see whether where we are in the scheme of things. Rather, we are told where we are. That's part of the system. You don't have to do too much thinking. We already did that for you. Here's your political system. You elect this guy, you elect that woman, you know, Republican, Democrat, whatever it is. Well, that's great. Except you do not decide who really wins. A whole other system exists that you have zero control over. And it elects for you who the eventual winner will be. I mean, that's just an example. So if we desire now to exercise our own authority and say, but that's not right, one person, one vote. You have built a conundrum within your own system. One person, one vote, because that's a mark of a democracy. But then somebody else gets that authority to rule out what you just did. Say, well, yeah, we know better. So your new president will be, or your new governor is just the person you did not want. Steve from Santa Barbara, what are you thinking?
Hi, Idris.
Hello.
Thank you for continuing to bring these questions up to help us think a little about the system we're living in.
Thank you.
So anyway, your words had me thinking about what is behind the system and its failures. And there's a consensus, a consciousness, an attitude that we are the exception to history and not just an historical blip. And so to change a failed system, I think, requires dropping this feeling that we're so special so that we can get to some level of creativity. Because I think we need creativity to create a new system.
But other societies have done it quite easily, actually. They've come up with systems that suit their needs, that are perfectly in tune with their vision, their culture, their hope for the future.
I totally agree with what you're saying. So we, in a sense of creativity, we can think of things new, but we could also borrow from things that work for others. But we think we're so exceptional and special that we have this arrogance that we won't do that, it seems. And that the media that controls consciousness kind of prevents Americans from kind of thinking for themselves on that matter, I think.
If you could identify a specific area in which you could successfully apply what you're offering today, what would you choose?
Well, I just think that what you're doing, your platform and the media that's maybe exposing people to question things and having a different consciousness is essential in motivating, activating people to think about change. So I just think that what you're doing and what different artists might do, just anything that might, you know, create a feeling of just experimentation and risk and just trying something new.
Would that something, let's say in the area of politics, would that something be still what we describe as democracy as we understand it? Would it be something new, more toward socialist society, more toward collectivism? What would it be in your
view? Well, as you say, I think some other societies have come up with some nice socialist ideas. And, you know, our Constitution, even, you know, like Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder. So just think, if the creativity of a slaveholder could draft the Constitution, what we could do nowadays with this, with all the things we've learned over the past two or three centuries.
Hmm. Well, thank you for calling in and getting us started discussing this topic today. Thanks, Steve. From Edgewater, E, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
Hope you're feeling well today and mending my, like you're supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm mending. I still look like Popeye's sister. With all these bandages and stuff. But in this situation that we're in, first let me ask you, do you think a political change, a governmental change, is warranted? I mean, from the ground up.
Yeah, I definitely think that. But I don't think we're going to be able to do anything about the system that's going on now.
But we can do something about the way we think about it.
Right.
Would you be changing your thinking around that?
But shouldn't we identify who we're dealing with, who the system is? Because we asked that question earlier in the week, who they is. And
yeah.
We could come up with an answer on that. Because it might be different for me than you or Henry or David from Brooklyn or Jose or, you know, all the callers could have a different idea of who they is. To me, they is those eight families we talk about, the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Morgans, and I don't know the other names of the other five families, and the corporations, the big pharma, big oil, big agri, have all gotten together, and they're doing what they want to do, which is keep us in fear and keep us believing in their lies. And the reason is pretty despicable. I mean, who the system is to you? Is it different than what I just said?
Well, the system to me is, like you just said, an organized way in which things are to be done. People assemble themselves or they become assembled according to their interests. And that gives them the power to author the ways that we, the rest of the people, would live, the laws we have to obey, the things we must do. So they get that power because they organize themselves and they take ownership of the power to regulate, quote, the society, unquote. And they very seldom meet up with much resistance because people see them as being so powerful. Like right now in the United States, I think if you look at Trump's cabinet, I mean, the first qualification, it seems, is you have to have millions of dollars. Now, that has never been part of, that has not been since the formation of the society formally. But it, you know, the society evolved, the leadership evolved, but now we're back to a very pronounced and very clear division about who rules and how they rule. And we also back to the other flip side of the equation, in which we just get to follow. We get to pay the price for breaking these strange rules. So I that's how I see it.
Right. Well, back in the 70s, I believe, it was Nelson Rockefeller was the governor of New York State. And he was considered a rich man and his family, you know. And that was one of the few, you know. You know, Trump's was well known. We knew he was rich. They had the Trump Village over there by Coney Island. His father had all these things. So there was a few rich people that we knew. But now, in 2017, they would be considered poor compared to what's going on in the world now. There's so many people that are rich. When Bernie Sanders talked about the 1%, he was making up a story because it's more like 50-50 now. With the rich, it's just unbelievable. And who?
But there was a time, don't you agree, that being rich was not enough. Being rich was just not enough for membership. You had white nationalism, so you couldn't just be rich. You had to be white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant to be rich, to be meaningfully rich. You couldn't get into circles. You couldn't, no matter how much money you had, if you weren't fulfilling or meeting that first criterion, you were not part of the power elite. Now it's possible.
Right. And was Bernie Sanders talking about the rich, the disparaging rate between the rich and the poor? Who did he think he was talking about? Are you able to afford a $750,000 lake house?
Well, you know, I would leave that until we get definitive ideas about, you know, I don't know whether this was a property that belonged to somebody. He has three homes, as a matter of fact. So, you know, some of it could have been the result of family passing on property and so forth. So I don't know the details of it. But I don't envy, and you know, I'm not going to, if I'm going to disagree with Bernie, it would not be because he has three homes.
Well, I'm not envying him, but I'm saying he's the biggest hypocrite alive on the earth today if he's going to talk about the disparaging rate between the rich and poor, and he's one of the rich. And that cannot be denied. He's been in politics for 37 years. I never heard of him until this election. He's been over there in Vermont for 36 years. 550,000 white people, rich white people. There's 7,000 Asians, 7,000 blacks, and 7,000 Hispanics in Vermont. That don't even fill up a basketball game on a good night in Madison Square Garden. So what was Bernie Sanders talking about, and why were we putting all our faith in him? What was he making believe he was the new Ralph Nader and he was the advocate for the people? We've been tricked.
We've discussed the very puzzling Mr. Sanders, and we should get a bit more detailed about it because there have been developments around Bernie Sanders which have caused many of the people who had backed him to walk away. Thanks a lot for calling in. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, David.
Hello? Oh, yes, David.
Oh, great.
Okay, my head has been really perking up in terms of this discussion. As I see it, this is one of the most brilliant systems of governance in world history, as far as I can see. The established people who, the establishment who created this system, let's start with the Constitution. Very nice document and very interesting. But as far as I see, this Constitution is designed to maintain the dominance of the ruling class, that is the oligarchy and the people who really establish the nation. And it is, you know, just perfect for them because it is giving us an illusion of democracy and what we have now in terms of our economic structure is capitalism. And as far as I'm concerned, capitalism and democracy go together like oil and water. They cannot exist. You cannot have a system that is designed to enrich the few at the expense of the many. In terms of the system, people are trained, just like you train a dog or some kind of circus animal, to do certain things. And what I have found in my years on this planet here in this country is that people think that is made in stone that we have this so-called, politically, the two-party system. You know, people will always talk about the two-party system. And that is because the ruling class control everything in terms of media, information, and what goes on here that people learn in school. And this is just wonderful for them. Now, people have to understand what this system is about. The system is about the ruling class, the deep state, the oligarchs, all those people involved at that level. Their goal is to enrich themselves as much as they can to infinity and just to keep as much wealth as possible to the rest of the people, that less than that 99% and below, to the level so you don't have a rebellion. They just don't want a rebellion, so they're going to do just enough to keep the people in check, to keep the people in check. And that's what the system is about. At the same time, they enrich themselves. Constitution is very interesting. If we look at...
David, are you there? Could you apply what you just said? Could you give, using an example, a contemporary example, could you just apply what you just said and so that we can even better understand?
Yes, I can do that right now. I'm going to do that. All right, let's talk about, I mentioned the Constitution. Let's mention the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. That's in the Constitution. However, even though that was in the Constitution that we supposedly have and would go by, it was until 1965 when that part about the voting went into effect. Before that, from 1865 to 1965, the ruling class did whatever it could to subjugate African Americans as much as they could, and even with the Constitution in effect. The 13th Amendment, people have to look at that. The 13th Amendment that ended chattel slavery did not end slavery because the loophole was as big as could be to just criminalize the people and maintain slavery. That's what they did. So these are examples of how people have things written in, let's say, constitutions and so forth, and still maintain a system, a very bad system that does not benefit most of the people in this country. The system does not do that. So I say to the rich and powerful that control the system, they're brilliant in what they're able to do. And, I'm so sorry to see all the ways they have of dividing people. This is the Olympics of how to divide and conquer people. They are just masters at it, and they will divide and conquer people. And the most important way they have of doing it is going by people's phenotype. So you have people looking at their phenotype and deciding that they will do things that are against their own best interests. And the masters of America, the ruling class here, are just, they are Olympic champions at this. They do this better than anyone in the world. That's why we are number one in wealth for the ruling class.
In the current situation that we're in, do you think that the system, the political system, the governmental system, should be overhauled?
Absolutely.
What would that overhauling entail?
Well, that overhauling would actually entail a different system to change the way the governance work. We need some kind of other governance other than what we have right now, where we have these little vassals that set up. Let's take Congress. That's the people in Congress, and they are completely under bribery, because a system that allows the ruling class to reward those people in the legislative branch, that doesn't work in the interests of the people who live there. They do things every way they can to benefit the ruling class at the expense of the people. That's what they do at the state, the federal, and the local level. And people don't get it. People don't get it. There's no reason for people to be poor here. Yeah? There's no reason for anybody to be poor, and they tell you, the ruling class tells you, well, you know, you're responsible for yourself, and you got to take it into your own hands. At the same time, people don't understand the ruling class is subsidized. The people of this country subsidize the ruling class at all levels, the federal level, contracts, the state level, with all the tax breaks and actually at every level, and subsidies and special provisions that are made. You can look these things up. People don't even understand. You can look these things up and see in every state where subsidies are being given to capitalists. And they talk about some welfare mom who gets a little check or some food stamps or whatnot. And most of those people getting those checks have a phenotype of what we call white. So people don't know what's going on. So these people are brilliant at the way they're able to dazzle the people of this country. I mean, this is a masterful system for the benefit of those at the very top. I mean, these people are absolutely brilliant.
Thank you, David, for calling and contributing so meaningfully. I thank you all for calling and getting us all, you know, starting to think about this thing a little bit. Because in the end, it will be inspiring your change of action. You know, you no longer, once you start thinking about this, you're no longer going to go for the okie doke, no matter how brilliant it is. You're thinking now, and you put yourself in a position of power. It doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong. It is important, though, that you just train yourself to think. That's the great victory. Thinking. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories, LEID stories at gmail.com. And of course, you know, tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday. So say whatever you want to say and let's hear what you have to say. This is your space. I like and I make sure that in the programs that we do here, Lead Stories and PRN, we are also giving time for people and space for people to participate as fully as possible in the conversations we're having. I certainly enjoy it. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you. Bye-bye.